Welcome to the Mountain Grapevine program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes.
Hello, everybody. On the telephone today, we have Al Bottega, who's the Chief Enforcement Officer with Asheville ABC Board here in Western North Carolina. Al, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to have a discussion with everyone.
Just for starters, tell me a little bit about your personal background, how you came through what to get to where you are, and then we'll talk about the agency's mission that you work for.
The short version of it is that this is year 29 for me in law enforcement, all of it done here in Western North Carolina in Duncan County. And my primary background was as a deputy sheriff. I spent a long time doing narcotics, worked on FBI DEA task force, and had a completely different discipline before I came here to the Asheville ABC Board. It provided me the opportunity to kind of round my career out with some real, what I feel is honest-to-God community service. So that's kind of what brought me here.
Tell us about what the agency's mission is as it sits here in North Carolina.
Under my watch as chief here, the sign that hangs above my door says compliance through education and assistance. So what my objective is to help all of the people through the beer, wine, spirit industry to give them all the information that they need to be as successful as they possibly can be in their business. And then take the enforcement side of it, now once I've loaded their plate with all the information they need to be right and do right, and then hold them accountable for the rules, the regulations, and the state statutes. I thought it would only be fair to apprise everyone of how it should be done, give them everything they need to be successful, and that way anyone who's made a choice to do otherwise made a conscious choice, not a mistake.
I'm sure that folks out in this part of the state are interested in learning exactly what the regulations are and how to be compliant and so forth. I think most of the time conversations, at least around our organizations, have been around distilleries. We have a couple of folks that we associate with on a daily basis here, as you know, in the western part of the state who own distilleries. I don't hear a whole lot other than some complaints about the licensing process for getting a winery started or a cidery or meadery. How would you play into those types of businesses?
One of the things that we do differently here than a lot of my peers do is that we'll help anyone who's trying to apply for a permit. And the way that we do that is we bring them here in-house to my offices, we sit them down in a conference room, and we download the application packet for them and give them some framework to be successful, to get applied in and to come up and running. The system is, at best, difficult to navigate if you're new to it. And since we have so much exposure, we can kind of help folks to set the packets up the way the state likes to see it. When it comes to wine, there's some difficulty in there because there's some federal regulations, there's general statutes, there's rules and regulations from the ABC Commission. So there's a lot of masters to serve. It's difficult to do on your own. So we open up the opportunity for them.
Well, I have to tell you, I've been talking to folks here in this region for the last 10 years, Al, about wineries and the licensing process and all that kind of stuff. And I've never heard of anybody talking about that kind of assistance here in Asheville.
You know, it's the same thing that we do for the spirit people. It's open to everybody. The door is always open. And it seems to be that sometimes beer, wine especially, those that are going to distill or brew, they have a network of their own, and sometimes they're slow to step outside of it. And I get that there's a misconception that we're the bad guy because we're law enforcement, because we enforce the rules and the regs. And sometimes folks are slow to come. But it's something we do on a regular basis, though. It really is.
Well, in a previous life in Arizona, I used to teach classes at some of the local community colleges down there on ABC rules and regulations that applied down there. So I've never seen anything like that out in this part of the world, but we'll see if we can help that along somehow.
By all means. And I have to tell you that the truth behind it is that the more people that we get to come to the table with us, the the more knowledge we gain. And it's, you know, it's an ever-changing industry. It really is. I mean, but as it comes to current times here in Western North Carolina, it's part of the fabric now. It's part of our culture.
What is the geographic reach that you look to have, Al? I mean, you're stationed here in Asheville. Are you sort of limited, like, to the 23 mountain counties? How does that geography thing work for you?
Well, here's the hamstring part of it. As far as my primary goes, it is the city of Asheville here where I'm stationed. One of the things that I did 11 years ago when I came here was that I kind of broke down those barriers. And we teach classes all throughout Western North Carolina. I figure anybody who wants the knowledge, it's my responsibility to get there and give it to them to make their business successful. And it's only fair. Help in this industry is hard to find. It really is.
Amen to that. Okay, so now back on the geography thing, would this apply to areas east of Asheville, say Statesville? How far east do you actually go?
Where it becomes difficult is as we move east, as we get towards the flatlands, there's other ABC boards and organizations out there.
Okay.
So what becomes one of the things that I have to do at professional courtesy is call whatever the local jurisdiction is, let them know what the intent is, find out if they want to co-chair that session with me or if they want me to just take care of it myself. Because it'd be bad form to step into their jurisdiction and put information out. You know, in Western North Carolina, we're lucky because there are no other full-time enforcement ABC agencies from our point west. Everybody else is a contract officer from a local police department or sheriff's office or whatever it may be. So we are, as it goes west, we're pretty much the last of the breed.
The reason I was asking that, of course, is as a member of the board of the North Carolina Muscadine Grape Association, it might be a venue for me to at least mention the availability of these kinds of services to help some of our potential members.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, and if you all have conferences where you all get together, I mean, we can come in as guest speakers or presenters at conferences, which kind of circumvents the mutual aid or assistance kind of request that we would have to make if we're invited into a conference.
Okay, well, we certainly have annual conferences, usually in January, for the Grape Association.
Good.
Let me jump into a couple of specific things here. There's a farmer here that's got 10 acres of grapes in the ground. He's going to be looking at getting a winery built when his grapes come in. That'll be another 5 or 6 years before he's got enough grapes to harvest in order to have enough to start making wine. What is the lead time that this group of people should have to approach you or your organization to say, okay, we're 5 years out, 6 years out, 3 years out, whatever it is. How long does the process take to get a license for a winery?
The process itself is not very complicated. As we timeline it, you might from start to finish look anywhere from 90 to 120 days for the actual paper process to take place. But what I caution folks on is that what they need to do for their product is to put themselves on a timetable that's somewhere in about the 18-month period. If you're 18 months out from harvest or 18 months out from production, you need to begin to investigate the application process as well as all of the physical assets that you're going to need to timeline both your physical asset as well as your responsibilities to the state and the permit process. And for that, some of those things take a minute to make happen. You know, the paper process is not very difficult. You have to start with the rules, the regs, and the laws to figure out if your scenario fits the profile or if you have to change your footprint some.
This raises an interesting question because a couple of weeks ago I had an interview with a distillery owner. And he was telling me that part of his difficulty was that in order to apply for his license, he had to have the physical building already in place a long time before he actually would get his license. Does that same thing apply for wineries?
It does to a certain degree. If it's going to be wine for retail, then yes. If it's going to be wine for just consumption, no. But for retail, it's going to require that all of the state and federal guidelines are met, and that is through a physical facility. So that all has to be all the way up to the point of certificate of occupancy before application process begins. That's why I throw out the 18-month thing. It's important for people to understand, too, that they need to get into the rules, the regs, and the law. They need to review those first when they're putting together their business plan to be sure that their physical footprint is going to fit what their vision is for their winery and for their business.
And this is going to be what part of the 18-month look ahead is going to reveal.
It is. It is. You know, anyone with a good solid business plan is going to be anywhere from 24 months to 60 months on their plan, especially to develop the grape, develop the product. They need to have a long-term plan. This is not by any means or measure a hasty action to take at all. There's a lot of moving parts.
In the educational series that you present, this is a help to get people to do that kind of thing?
The unfortunate thing to when it comes to putting the education out, we usually get people that are right at the verge of beginning to launch their operation, and they come to realize that they kind of put the cart before the horse. So the earlier we can get people in, the better off we are. You know, we love folks that are just in the concept phase, that are just now beginning to pull the pieces together to decide how they should build this business, how they should build this winery, and we love to get them. The earlier, the better, because it'll help to take a lot of stress off of them.
Well, we certainly got a couple of people in our organization that fit that profile.
It's a funny thing about dreams, and wineries are just one of those things. It's a very romantic concept. It really is. And sometimes it separates itself from the practical process because it's such a glorious vision, you know, to watch the grapes grow and to see the ground live, and it gets lost. It does. It's a heartbreak, but it happens.
We have a lot of firsthand experience here because I do a lot of consulting for new vineyards out in this area. And I can tell you, it's just, I almost laugh sometimes because people have this view about what it's going to be like to have a vineyard. Oh my God, Henry, we're going to have a vineyard, you know. So I always tell everybody, you know, there's a lot of romance in it. It's a really interesting thought. But I said, it's farming. It's work.
You know, I am a first-generation Italian-American, and I own a small family farm in Weaverville. And I am blessed with the fact that the grapes that I grow on my property come from Parma, Italy. Were
wow.
Carried here by my grandfather. And it's one of the true pleasures in my life because it's a tie to my family's past. It's a tie to my grandfather who raised me. And I grew up growing grapes. And we farm for a living, and I know what's involved in it. And people come to my place, and they're kind of swept over by the fact as to how healthy the vines look and how they're arbored and trimmed, and everything is just glorious. And I have to giggle as they're sitting there going, I should do this at my house. And I'm thinking, you just need to come visit once a month is all you need to do. You do not need to do this to yourself because it is a painstaking task. It just is. And I mean, now it's glorious. At harvest, it really is. I mean, it's like putting on a warm blanket to my past.
Yep.
But it is a lot of work up to that point. And it's a lot of worry, too, because I'm held victim to everything from the bugs to the environment to the weather to just plain old-fashioned bad luck.
That's what being a farmer is all about.
It is. It is. You know, it's funny because in my youth, I grew up growing potatoes and growing vines, and we eventually moved to sod. And when I left the farm as a young man to join the military, I made a promise to myself that I would never turn a piece of dirt again and I would never pick a rock up. As soon as I got settled and made a family of my own, it's the very first thing that I did because it kind of brought me back to where I came from. So it never goes away. It never goes away.
Well, folks, we've been talking on the telephone today with Al Bodega, who is the Chief Enforcement Officer with the Asheville ABC Board here in Asheville, North Carolina. Hang on, folks. We'll be right back.
Today's program is being brought to you by
Ina Iverson's Indoor Smoking Kit. Most of our listeners these days are non-smokers, but we all have friends who still smoke, even though they know it is bad for their health. When our smoking friends come to our home, we always get a little nervous about asking them not to smoke in our own home. It makes it seem inhospitable, if you know what I mean. The perfect host now has a better idea to the awkward suggestion of please smoke outside or please don't smoke in here, especially if it is winter and the wind is wailing across your back porch. Now you can offer your smoking guests the perfect alternative solution, Ina Iverson's Indoor Smoking Kit. Ina has packed her indoor smoking kit in a plain Ziploc sandwich baggie so it's small and easy to keep on hand in a convenient location, ready for your next smoking guest. The Ziploc baggie contains a large black plastic trash bag, a piece of string, and instructions. Ina confirms how easy it is to use and has tested it on her friends and relatives. Your smoking guest just places the black plastic garbage bag over their head and pulls it down around their waist. Then simply tie the provided string around the waist, providing a small private space for them to smoke and prevent the smoke from escaping into the room. Then they can smoke as much as they want without disturbing your non-smoking family members or leaving your carpet and drapes filled with that oppressive tobacco smoke smell. Ina says she can hear her guests talking clearly through the plastic bag as they smoke. Most of her guests who smoke don't come back again and whip out their cigs. Some just don't come back. Ina is working on a similar solution for the unwanted door-to-door salesman. Ina Iverson's Indoor Smoking Kit is another special product made in the good old USA here in Madison County, North Carolina. You can buy Ina Iverson's Indoor Smoking Kit for $1.298 at Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall. And now back to our regular program.
Welcome back, everybody. We've been on the phone today with Al Bodega, who is the Chief Enforcement Officer with the Asheville ABC Board here in Western North Carolina. Al, just before the break, you were talking about some grapes that you were growing over at your place. What kind of grapes are they, and where exactly in Italy are they from?
They're originally from a little place in northern Italy called Parma, which is where my family migrated from. And it's kind of a hybrid version of a La Crescent grape. It's a white, kind of has a, it's an unusual looking little cluster that'll come out. It's not in a bunch that you're normal to see. It's kind of a long linear. It's basically pretty hardy. Our weather is not perfect for it, to be honest. And of course, the weather cycles have really, really changed. It's been crossed over. It came from Parma, came with my grandfather. Originally, we come from a little place called Farmingville in New York. And it was grown there for years and years. And when I took my grandfather here, we were able to move some over into a little glass house that we have on the property and kind of start in the glass house, eventually go to a poly house, come out from the poly, go to the ground, and eventually get the ground right. Too much clay in North Carolina.
We do have a lot of clay. That's
we
for
do.
Sure.
We
That's
do.
For sure.
We do.
Well, let's jump into the regulation and some very specific things here. For example, I know a lot of our radio listeners don't realize there's some limitations on making wine at home and making beer at home. My understanding is that it's 200 gallons per family per year.
It is. It is. And those regulations, you can find them online. They're located in the 18B general statutes in North Carolina. It's actually 18B 1001. And it goes into how people can grow the product and develop it into a wine on their property for their own consumption. And it also goes all the way up into getting permits for wine shops, for tastings, for everything else. It's pretty much located within that 1001. And the most important thing to read is actually to fall back a little further into the rules and regulations for the North Carolina ABC Commission into prohibited practices. That's, you probably need to know what you can't do more so than what you can't do.
Give us some examples of the cannot do.
The cannot do's are blendings of wines. You can't advertise as one type of product if it's not a pure product. It has to be as labeled as delivered. So it can't be a blended product unless it's labeled as such. And they'll talk about imitation wines that has any type of synthetic materials in it. It has to be kind of 100% disclosure, which is just good business practice anyway. Let your patron know exactly what they're buying. Some of the other stuff that we get into sometimes is unsealed containers. There's a lot of folks that watch the beer industry do the growler thing and think, well, why couldn't we do that same thing with wine? But it's a completely different product. It really is.
Yeah.
Do you know if there's anybody in this region making digestives?
You know, not that I'm aware of. Now, it's there's some stuff happening in the central part of the state and the eastern part of the state, but not so far here that I'm aware of.
Well, one of the things that we're trying very hard to do through the French Broad Vignerons group is to promote a wider variety of value-added products. And some of the things that we've looked at is digestives, in my case, trying to understand how I can get at a specific market here. We, as you know, in the mountains here, we have a lot of natural products, and there's a very small but limited demand for some organic grape alcohol in order to make tinctures and certain face products and so forth because of celiac patients. It turns out that if you have grain alcohol made from grain, it carries over into the actual ethanol to the point where it has a severe reaction with people who have celiac disease. So we're trying to figure out how to do that without going through the regulations as we understand it now. I can't really do it here. I have to go. It's very complicated, but that's one of the things we're trying to do is look at these additional types of value-added products. The other thing I wanted to ask you about is a lot of people don't understand why the ABC gets involved in making alcohol from a distillery. I mean, it's a very interesting thing that we're allowed to make 200 gallons of wine at home, so we're creating the alcohol, but we're not allowed to concentrate it once we got it.
The difference between fortified wine and unfortified wine is really what you have to use as the benchmark, is the percent of alcohol by volume. And once it becomes a fortified wine where the alcohol content gets higher, it changes venue. Now it comes over into an ABC territory.
Okay.
And, you know, keep in mind, too, that this is a controlled state. This is only one of 13 examples in the nation. So you have a regulatory body that comes out of Raleigh that keeps a close watch on beer, wine, spirits. And as you'd imagine, because it's a state entity, it generates income. It generates a tremendous amount of income, to be honest with you. Yeah. You know, you look at just the general fund, just what comes through spirits. Take beer, wine out of it, but just spirits. It puts about $287 million into the general fund for the governor each year between the tax, the tariff, the bailment on it. It's a big money maker. With money comes politics. With politics comes complication.
I guess the locals would call you a revenuer.
You know, I've been called that.
You have, okay.
Yeah, but you know, it's one of those things where there's money generated through the system. You look at just the local ABC board here in Asheville that just does spirits, just does it in the city of Asheville, just within the city limits, not within the county. The county, believe it or not, is dry. There are no spirits in Buncombe County. There is beer, wine, but there is not spirituous liquor. It's a $34 million a year business just in the city of Asheville.
Wow.
Yeah, it's staggering. It's just but you know, a good portion of that money by statute goes to training and education, and we run all kinds of programs for everything from high school kids to drink responsible to just whatever we can put out in the community. And that money comes back by statute. It's not given willingly, but it comes back, and we drop every dime of it back in.
Well, I know earlier we had talked briefly about some type of educational funding to assist the kinds of things going on here in Western North Carolina. You want to give us a little shot on what you could do with that in helping the local folks and how we can help provide some additional funding?
It starts with conversations like this that I have to take, and I have to sell to the board here at Asheville ABC, which is a wonderful board. I mean, they're really receptive to helping to build the community, build the state, and they've been real helpful with all of my harebrained ideas in the past. But it takes a sales pitch, because it takes money to make that happen. So what I do is we'll talk about ideas and concepts. I'll present them to the board, and I kind of do a cost-benefit analysis. This is what it's going to cost us. This is the return to the community, because we're all interested in growing Western North Carolina, as well as the state of North Carolina, making it a place where people want to come, they want to have their businesses, they want to employ other folks, they just want to do things to make us a greater state than what we are now. And I take that funding dollar and I squeeze every little penny out of it that I possibly can to help folks. You know, I know it's a great idea when you first hear it about putting on these conferences for the people in your organizations, but the way that it comes out is, I look at it as these are people that are going to make a product that is labeled a North Carolina product. They're going to put other folks to work. Somebody has to make the bottles. Somebody has to make the labels. Someone has to ship it. And this helps all of us. This grows us all. So it's kind of a selfish motive, to be honest.
Well, that's my particular idea in doing what we're doing here is we see an ability to help a whole lot of people in a relatively short period of time by helping to develop viticulture industry. It's not just necessarily my little vineyard here, but to help the industry. And that's why I spend so much time every day doing this kind of thing and to help do the educational bit to make it grow.
And it's people like you who take on the responsibility that everyone else gets the benefit from. And I can only hope that people stop for just a second and pay attention to the folks that are making this wheel turn for them, and that they in turn become part of it and help turn the wheel. Before you know it, we'll have an unbelievable amount of momentum.
Absolutely. That's where we see it going too. Okay, Al, if people wanted to call upon you to do something, how would we reach you? Phone number, email address, website?
The best way to start correspondence is through email. That's the best way. The email is really simple. It's all lowercase, and it's chief, C-H-I-E-F, dot, B-O-T-T-E-G-O, at, all one word now, Asheville, A-B-C-L-E, .com. My phone number is 828-775-6675. This theory is really, really simple. It couldn't be any easier. I take what you need, and I make it happen, period.
That's simple.
it couldn't be any simpler. And, you know, I've got lots of friends in the industry, and I'm not the only guy that will come and talk. I'll take advantage of all of the resources that I have. Those that I can't encourage willingly to come, I'm more than happy to shame them into coming, whatever it takes.
I love it.
So, yeah.
Super. Well, we'll see if we can get you hooked up with the couple of organizations I'm working with, too, and get some more visibility for the kinds of help and services you can provide. We think it's fantastic, Al.
Oh, good. I'm glad. And you know what? Let's, to everybody out there that's listening, don't make this theory, don't make it conversation. Make it real. Just make it happen. That's all. You know, don't talk it to death. Shoot a phone call, shoot an email, and let's just make it work.
Absolutely. We've been talking on the phone today with Al Bodega, Chief Enforcement Officer with Asheville ABC Board here in Asheville, North Carolina. Al, thanks again. We really appreciate your taking time to be with us today.
It's my pleasure.
Okay, folks, we're going to call it a wrap for today's program.
This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio from Madison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers! Thank you.